Jeff Woods joins us once again. Woods, how you doing?
Good, great, Mr. Gregor. Thank you.
Well, we look outside, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, but we're now into March, and spring is right around the corner. And, you know, some activities. People now, we come out of hibernation a little bit. We're kind of like bears, and suddenly everybody's like, okay, I want to do some stuff and everything else. Early on, most of us, I think, are probably just too static in the wintertime. So we get out, whether it's cleaning the garage or doing some, you know, gardening, or we're getting everything ready. Now, all of a sudden, we're sore. So how can they prevent that first weekend of soreness?
Well, I guess the best thing you could do is be thinking about some conditioning, making yourself a little bit stronger before you get involved in those activities. And honestly, Gregor, the most simplistic approach, if someone's to start some sort of basic strength training program, and you're doing that, you know, at least a couple of times a week, and maybe as many as four times a week for the next 6 weeks, you could expect some adaptations to take place over 6 weeks where you get a little bit stronger and your muscles and all of your connective tissues that stabilize your joint sites to tolerate stress a little bit more effectively. So that would be a step in the right direction.
So is 6 weeks kind of a good base point for anyone, whether you start training, to start see some legitimate results? Like, you know, because most people, I'm guessing, are starting at zero, right, where they haven't been doing something. So then you start and you work up your intensity, 2, 4, 6, whatever level you're at. Like, is 6 weeks a good number? Should you see results quicker than that?
No, I wouldn't say quicker than that. And especially if we're talking about more sedentary, less active individuals who haven't been doing a lot. Like in a more highly trained individual, like an elite level athlete, when they're working through various phases of training, they could expect to have adaptations take place in probably 3 to 4 weeks, but they're more highly trained. For somebody who is a little bit weaker, not highly trained, they run the risk of getting injured. So the progression in a phase of training has to take a little bit longer. We have to be a little bit more conscious of injuring the participant in a workout program. So for untrained individuals, the science kind of dictates that 6 weeks is a more appropriate timeline for a phase of training to take place where they would do it safely and not get hurt. And that's working out, like I say, anywhere from 2 to potentially 5 times a week. And the things that would be important to understand there, like, it would be the intensity of your workout record. So if you're lifting weights and you're going at it really aggressively and working towards your threshold and heavier weight loads, for example, an individual might have to take more recovery time between workouts. So you might only need 2 workouts a week. If you're doing lower intensity, like a walking program, for example, and you wanted to improve your aerobic capacity a bit in conjunction with some strength training so that you could have do more running, if that was your goal after 6 weeks, because the intensity might be a little bit lower in that scenario, you might be able to get away with working out more frequently. But so you can manipulate the variables a little bit within a weekly phase of training in your 6 week macro cycle of training, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, no, that does make sense to me. Now, can we go into maybe more of like a realistic plan? Right, you talked about you started out with the 6 weeks thing, and then going on depending on your day. But how can someone? Is there a way to gauge where they're at as far as their physical ability, like other than waiting until we get sore?
Well, yeah, I guess that you could do this. I mean, for example, we could categorize it. So if we're talking about, again, that sedentary person who sits at a desk most of the day, if that's what your job is, sitting at a desk. And then when you go home at night, if you're not taking part in any structured activity, like, I mean, you're a pretty sedentary individual and your aerobic function is going to be pretty low. So the best place for that person to start is to start trading in, you know, 30 minutes of desk time for at least 10 to 20 minutes of walking every day, or at least standing. And it's interesting, even if you're standing over sitting at a desk, you can actually increase your lifespan. If you're doing that every day, it will have a positive effect on your long-term health, just standing over sitting. Now, if you go to the next step and you're walking every day, you know, for 20 minutes, as opposed to 30 minutes of sitting, you really start to decrease your probability of any chronic disease. Like, you improve your heart health, and consequently, you still improve even more so your lifespan. So it can have really positive effects. Now, if you're more active than that, but you don't strength train, for example, let's say you're already in a walking program, just incorporating three basic exercises in conjunction with your walking program, like just doing a basic chest press of some sort, like that would be a push-up, for example, or then doing some form or variation of a squat, Gregor, like just even bodyweight squats, or holding, you know, some light dumbbells and just getting your hips to go low, get into a nice squat posture, learn how to do squats, and then doing some sort of rowing action, like a pull for your back. Those three basic strength exercises work your whole body. And for a person who has no experience with strength training, that would be a perfect place to start. And you could expect after 6 weeks, whether you're gardening or doing work around the house, or you want to start playing a little bit of golf and reduce your risk of muscle soreness, being a little bit stronger will help.
We've got a lot of texts coming in as far as push-ups go, because some people are like, man, I can't do 5 push-ups, right? How do you build up strength? Because now, do it now. Sure, you could go, I guess, to the easier push-up to start, go on your knees just to, you know, to build up your strength. But ultimately, Jeff, do you have any tips on how a person, just a basic thing, if they don't have weights, you know, just to handle their own body weight, to push-ups to go from 2 to 4 to 6 to 8, et cetera?
Mm-hmm. Well, Gregor, a good idea, you just hit it on the head. Like, you mean to put some sort of padding down on the ground and start from your knees, whether you're a man or a woman. I mean, sometimes just if you're a really tall person, for example, trying to do push-ups off your toes, it's tough, and you can wreak havoc with your shoulder and you end up with an injury, and then you can't do anything. So starting from your knees really makes it quite a bit easier. Now, even if you find doing push-up from your knees difficult, you can do a push-up off the wall, believe it or not. And I've seen some great success there. So, you know, if you can get up against a wall, lean into the wall, and do push-ups with your hands on the wall, as soon as you can do 3 sets of 10 there, the progression would be to get to the ground, then do 3 sets of 10 push-ups off your knees. And once you can do that, maybe you're going to try and do 5 push-ups off your toes, 5 off your knees. And then do 3 sets like that. And then slowly each week, just try to improve the number of repetitions that you can do off your toes.
How many days a week should you be doing it?
You should probably, 2 days a week would be fine to start off with that. Because, and everybody else, I mean, there's individual difference in terms of how sore we get when we do these exercises. So some people might need 2 days recovery in between. Some people might be fine with 1. So you're probably going to end up doing those workouts, Gregor, anywhere between 2 and 3 workouts a week, somewhere in there.
Now, should that depend on, let's say you're starting and you literally can't do like 1 push-up on the ground. So then you go to the wall and you do 10 off the wall and you do 3 sets of 10. That's good, because going off the wall is obviously significantly easier, and then you can just change your angle to make it harder?
That's correct. Yeah. So for example, if you're doing a push-up off your toes and you're doing it like flat on the ground, you're going to be pushing somewhere between 50 and 75% of your body weight, okay? Now, if you do a push-up against the wall, you might only be, you know, pushing 20% of your body weight.
Oh, okay.
And again, part of this depends on how tall an individual we are and how long our arms are, all of that. And there's ways to figure all this out exactly, but I'm just giving you some rough guidelines as far as the percentage of what your body weight might be pushing in those scenarios.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. Well, what's good stuff, Matt?
Yeah, great. Thanks, Gregor. You got to sort of let me go, do you? I got some more stuff for you. But
well, what else do you want to talk about?
Well, the one thing I wanted to sort of just throw out there, too, is just for people to understand why our muscles get sore. You know, typically when you start off with an exercise or any activity that you haven't done for a long time, so it's typically an increase in the amount of stimulus because you haven't worked that hard or that long, you know, for many months. And it's the eccentric action. It's the lengthening of muscle in a stressful situation that causes the soreness. The best thing you can do if you end up getting really sore, forget the salt bath thing, just, you know, a nice warm water bath and then some light aerobic activity the following day after you get sore muscles, that will help to sort of control and manage the muscle soreness effectively.
I like that. I got muscle soreness from doing bench press on Tuesday still.
Well, you know what? Then your best thing is maybe a little light massage from your wife. I highly endorse that. And then beyond that, a little bubble bath, babe.
Yeah, well, Epsom salts, buddy. I'm all over that. Now, what about if you do, like, I know Jaromir Jagr now, obviously at a young age, he told the story how he was doing 100, or he was doing 1,000 air squats a day. That was what he was doing, right, in different sets of stuff. If you want to get stronger, and let's say you become good at push-ups, can you do too much damage? If your body's comfortable with it and you're doing, I don't know, like 60 a day, three sets of 20 at three different times, you're doing that every day. Is there a negative to that?
Yeah, there is, Gregor, and here's what it would be. What happens, and a lot of people do this, you know, when they're on holidays, they're doing high numbers of push-ups. You can create muscular imbalance. So the front side, like all the muscles in the front side of your spine and specifically your chest, they start to get really strong because you're not doing, you know, enough work for the backside of your body. And consequently, we get internally rotated shoulders, we get really tight across the chest, and it starts to hunch and bring our shoulders forward a little bit. So that can create some problems with functional mobility, especially for golfers. I'll use as an example where you need a good shoulder turn, but the muscles on the front side of your body get so tight that it makes it hard to be functional because you've created all these muscular imbalances in your body from doing too much work on one side of it.
Okay, so then what would be the best counterbalance? If you're doing a lot of push-ups, what do you have to do on your back to even it out?
So a lot of like rowing motions for your back, so like simple cable rows on a cable machine, lat pull downs, for example, or just making sure too, like if you're doing four sets of 10 repetitions for your chest, make sure you're doing the same number of repetitions and weight loads for the back side of your body too, because you want to work both sides of your body equally so that you don't end up with that muscular imbalance.
Good tips, Woods. It's kind of like why you have one bicep bigger than the other. I've never understood why. So hopefully you can fix that.
Yeah, well, I can fix it on you, Bal. And then for our listeners, too, it's just, you know, everybody is not going to be symmetrically perfect. I mean, we all are going to be out a little bit. But just, you know, again, try to do the same amount of work for left and right side limbs and front side, back side of the body. Try to keep your training volumes consistent.